Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Colibri Games podcast. My co-host Marina is off on vacation this week, so we're kicking off with our very special podcast. Actually, this is the first time that we've had a guest who's not a Colibri join us, and we're super excited about that. Today we're going to talk about market trends, social 2.0, some IDFA changes, and the hybridization of games. I have the one, the only, Isa Yildiz, who is coming at us from Game Refinery. She is the amazing head of growth for EMEA there, and has all sorts of awesome insights that I think are really going to be valuable when it comes to guiding our understanding of where mobile games are going in the future, from a pretty high level, but we're gonna also push a bit to get into some of the nitty-gritty. I'd like everyone to say hello to Isa. Welcome aboard.
Hello, Nate. Thank you so much for the introduction. It's really great to be here. I'm super excited to give you some insights about the market, what has been happening, and it's really great to do this collaboration. I'm very, very excited.
Well, thank you. That was really sweet. So if we could start off and just learn a little bit more about you.
Of course. So my name is Isa Yildiz, and I'm from Turkey. Well, I've been in the digital business for some time, but specifically like in the SaaS businesses. And for the past 3 years, I've been working in the mobile app space, and especially for the past like 1.5 and 2 years, I've been working with mobile gaming companies closely. And what I am doing right now is helping any company that is in the basically in the mobile gaming space find the right insights about competition, about the market, and make better games, especially in the EMEA region, that the companies in the EMEA region. And it's super exciting to be in the mobile gaming space, seeing like all of those shifts, and it's super dynamic. I love it.
Nice. And for our viewers who aren't familiar with EMEA, could you just specify that acronym?
Of course, it's Europe, Middle East, and Africa. So I'm basically just looking at these regions in the sense that I'm helping the companies that are established here.
So on that note, let's talk a little bit about how you're helping them. So you're joining us from Game Refinery. Could you tell us, you know, about Game Refinery? What's the kind of work that Game Refinery does?
Of course. So Game Refinery is actually the leading mobile game insights product. We are basically helping game developers analyze and understand why and how the most like revenue driving games are so successful. And like while we are giving the data points, we are bringing the data like in a SaaS platform, and the data has like deep data and deep analysis and possibilities on like feature deconstructions, implementations, competitor analysis, and market trends. So it's basically a very deep analysis on the game mechanic players, and very much like on the mobile gaming space.
So with Game Refinery, I know that you guys have a extensive classification system that you use when you're evaluating games, when you're analyzing them, and when you're presenting key metrics on the games. Can you tell us how categories on your platform work? And why this is important?
Yes, of course. That's actually a very good point that you mentioned, because one of the important aspects when you're looking at gaming is to have the ability to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges. Because when you're, for example, when you're making an RPG game or a match tree game, and you want to see like who are your main direct competitors, the taxonomy that the stores have, they're a little bit like broad, and like we want to make sure that we bring you the right taxonomy so that you can compare yourself with the right competitors. So what we did is we divided the mobile gaming space into 4 categories: casual, mid-core, sports and driving, and casino. And underneath these, we have like the genres and sub-genres. One of the most important things is that this is an evolving and expanding genre taxonomy, because the mobile gaming space is evolving, it's shifting. For example, and like maybe like 1 year ago, we weren't really talking about merge games, but it is definitely a sub-genre that on itself right now. So we have it, for example, added into the system in the genre taxonomy. So things like that, you know, like, but it's very important to have these clear like definitions on the games that carry similar game mechanics.
Yeah, I think that's definitely important to do that apples to apples type, especially since, you know, you'll see like a lot of games that might on the outset look fairly similar, but actually have like key differences, like especially when it comes to like matching games, you know, match threes or like the blast games, like Toy Blast, are fundamentally different. And the same with the merge games. I've seen, you know, just the names itself that people are using can be super misleading, especially on idle. You know, like there are games that call themselves idle something that are not particularly idle. They're actually pretty hardcore, which is sort of our next question. We work with idle games, as you know. Where do they sit in the classification system?
It's actually quite like straightforward. The idle games are sitting under the idler subgenre. It is a subgenre that belongs to the simulation genre, and simulation is under the casual category.
So exactly like how do developers use the type of market data you provide? Obviously, you have this great classification system. You're doing some analyses. This is an audio podcast, so we can't really show off the cool dashboard and everything like that. But maybe you could explain a little bit more about like how developers are using this information that you're providing.
Of course. So the Game Refinery platform is a specific game intelligence platform because we have the game analysts dissecting the games, deconstructing the games and putting the feature and implementations and live ops data within the system. So that's why it's a very crucial data point collection for game designers, game producers, product owners. So like that, these are the groups that we work very closely together. There are a couple of like main use cases that they use the Game Refinery platform for. One is like, for example, the new game development. Let's say if you're looking into developing a new game and then you are wondering what kind of features you want to add to your game, how to design them, then you have a full data point and implementation examples database for that. The other one is like live ops strategizing. You see like how are the most successful games in the market are running their live ops, their seasonal events. So you have that data for getting like some best practices for your own games. And then there is also like the competition analysis and market feature trends search on top of this. And I mean, there are like a lot of like use cases, case studies on our website. Actually, we have like Folks Next Games with their live ops strategies, Ubisoft to find like new social features, the right social features, and a lot of these types of like use cases.
Word. So in terms of your analysis, are people like looking at, say, whether or not the ad merge is a feature or adding guilds, like what would be like the typical route that people would want to employ the data that they're collecting?
Most of the time, the companies are looking for like direct competitors and having a look at like what features that their direct competitors have. And but like when they actually have a look at the platform, they're actually enlightened with the implementation examples database and the live ops strategies too. So for example, like we had this like battle pass plan webinar that we did very recently. And then it's a very like interesting feature because not all casual games have it, but like the casual games that have it, they have very good implementation and it fits to the game very well. So it's a really nice monetization feature.
Okay. And so for your analysts, are they looking only at like new games or established games for the research?
It's actually, we have some like definition around it. The analysts at Game Refinery, they are looking at the top 200 sustained grossing games on a daily basis. And like, there are so many games that are actually coming in and out. So we have like thousands of games that are manually analyzed, but we keep the top 200 up to date. But there are cases where, for example, there is a very interesting game in the soft launch phase that like we analyze too. It's not necessarily in the top 200, or like we do also accept some requests from our clients, and we do analyze like specific requested games too.
Okay, so let's jump into some of the changes that you're seeing. So mobile games have changed tremendously over the past few years. You know, I remember I just started out when the only games were real that were making any money were premium games. And then it was a big deal when free-to-play got introduced and you could make in-app purchases. Like, that was kind of revolutionary, at least for mobile. And that's probably because I'm old. they had people had to deal with that. So, you know, the games changed a lot. There were the introduction of, you know, early free-to-play. They're fairly rudimentary. There wasn't live ops. And then we saw a rise in things like, you know, early adventures, early forays into hyper casual, and then it became like this whole industry. We've seen genres rise and fall. You know, there was a day when every other game was a match three, and now there's thankfully a little bit more variety for the players. Not to knock any match threes out there, but the games have changed a ton. What is a recent trend that you guys have noticed?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. I mean, looking at how it all evolved through time, like all of the like the free to play market is so like it has expanded so much. One thing I can probably speak about, like a trend that we have noticed in the past year, is probably like the social elements becoming more and more popular within the games. And like in the past, like for example, the match three games didn't have any social elements, or like it has gone to a completely different level in the past year, because it, like with the coronavirus outbreak, the games have started becoming more of a platform now, and many more games have started like adding social spaces and features in their games. And when I'm speaking about like a platform, games becoming a platform, so people don't only go into the games just to play the game itself, like the core gameplay, but they actually now log into the game to like spend some time in there, because there are like a lot of like different like social features and spaces added into the games. These social elements are mostly like available outside of the core gameplay, and these like brings a really good level of engagement. There are also like very nice benefits of these for the developers too, because now people still, we can't really go out so much, so people really choose games to hang around with friends, and that's why it brings a lot of like good retention, and it brings a whole new world for monetizing the game and making the game also more marketable. So imagine that you have like these fans of your game playing your game and hanging around, and there's like word of mouth. Their friends come in, and then you also have a new marketing source for your game too. So it's very beneficial for games, and we've been seeing a lot of like social elements getting added to the games.
And in terms of these social features, are there instances where adding these social features really doesn't work? Are there, you know, there's going to be people who are listening to this and they're going to say, okay, Game Refinery said that I need to add more social features. I need to make my game a part of the social 2.0. And then they're going to race to add like guilds and, you know, chat and sharing and, you know, massively multiplayer worlds. But it's possible that this isn't really relevant to their games. It's possible that, like, you know, this is going to be a complete misdirection for them. So mm-hmm. In short, yeah, are there games where adding these social features just doesn't work?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So I think it's better to like, for example, determine first of all, like, or maybe like it's important to define what we mean by social 2.0, because there is this like two ways. There is the social, like surgence of social elements in the games, like guilds and match trees and things like that. And then there is also like the examples of, for example, Roblox having a concert in the game, you know, and like that's a completely different example, because that's like that's now what we mean by the social 2.0, games are becoming more of a platform now. That I would personally say that maybe it's a little bit difficult to implement such a like a social space for not maybe all games, but like what we see is that Adding social features doesn't really have a negative for the game because it's not really affecting the core gameplay. And it's always something that is additional. So you get involved or you don't get involved. It doesn't have any effect on your gameplay experience. So what I would say is that we haven't seen a game that the social elements didn't work, and because the social features generally don't interfere with the core gameplay.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So it sounds like for developers that are considering social features, first and foremost, they need to make sure that the social feature does make sense with their overall gameplay. So if they have something, you know, where there's maybe a world that people can join, a virtual world, concerts make sense. If they have something where players are competing with each other, but no such world exists, well, you know, a concert wouldn't make sense, but guilds and things like that would be good. And that the likelihood that social features break the game are pretty low, at least in terms of a gameplay standpoint. So in this case, it's better to just err on the side of providing them,
Exactly. Because as I said, it's bringing good retention. So when people start interacting with each other, when people start having clans, when people start inviting their friends into the game, they have more likeliness of playing the game more and more on a daily basis.
Lovely. Speaking of marketing, there have been some exciting changes in the world of marketing. So as you know, or as our listeners might not know, recently Apple has restricted access for developers to something called the IDFA, the Identifier for Advertising, which is a unique ID that is unique to every user's device and is used by marketers to identify who a user is, if they've spent money, and all sorts of other details about them. Apple telegraphed this change about a year ago that they were going to be deprecating this, and recently implemented it just this month in May 2021. So this has had a ripple effect across the industry. It definitely makes it tougher for marketers to do really precise targeting. And of course, if it's harder for marketers, it's harder for people who make money off of advertising. I think on the other side, it's definitely something that I think a lot of users wanted more control over their personal privacy. So they too are going to feel the difference if they were looking for more options to have more privacy when it comes to their device. So I'm curious, you know, from your side of it, how is this change, this IDFA deprecation? And I'll also add, it's likely that other platforms will probably follow suit, but I'm curious, how has this change impacted the development of games?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And this is also one of the hot topics. I mean, it's a hot topic for anyone in the game, in the game industry, right? It's not even only the game in the app industry. So because of the IDFA change now, the games actually want to be able to drive revenue from other side of the world, the IAP. So now we actually talk a lot about we are producing a lot of content about that shift from IAA to IAP. So what does that mean? The in-app advertising focused games to in-app purchase focused games. So what we see is the shift in the more hybrid games coming up. For example, let's take Hyper Casuals as an example. Now, they I've been speaking to a lot of them recently, and there are a lot of them wanting to add game mechanics within the game that will more around the IAP world, because they want to be expanding their revenue stream onto the IAP side too. And there's also when we talk about hybridization, of course, there is the other part of the world with the hybridization too.
Let's talk a little bit more about hybridization of games. So we've heard hybridization bandied about. Could you tell me, firstly, what does hybridization mean?
Of course. Now, as I mentioned, there is this IE to IAP shift. It's probably going to be a must for many games to shift to a more hybrid.
Let's just make sure that we clarify for the audience. IAP, in-app purchase, IAA, in-app advertising.
Exactly.
What you're saying is that games are shifting from deriving most of their revenue from advertising, from showing ads, to deriving most of the revenue from selling in-game items, consumables, skins, mm-hmm. etc.
Exactly. We believe that they're going to be more the IAA games are going to have a little bit of at least like shift into the IAP world. They will try to have in terms of game development, they will try to have more mechanics in the game that will make the player do some purchases within the game. That's what we foresee. But when we talk about hybridization, what we mean by hybridization, hybridization is actually blending genres together. So we have been seeing this trend also happening within the game industry. It could be because there are a ton of games that are so similar to each other, and the games try to be somehow differentiate themselves or stand out from the competition. This is one of the reasons, and it's really the innovation actually. So we have been seeing very interesting, and this is one of the topics I really like to talk about, different genres coming to together, there's a core gameplay but different meta layers coming into the games.
Let's talk about that. What's an example of this to make it a little bit more concrete for our listeners?
Of course, if there's this, for example, the puzzles and survival game, it has the 4X and puzzle genre brought together. It's basically a 4X strategy game mixed with casual elements and heavy RPG character development elements. There is another example, which is Top Worth, a 4X strategy game that carries merge mechanics. These are mid-core games, but one example, a good example would be also Project Makeover, them bringing the decoration element and even further with those together with puzzle.
Yeah, that's super helpful. And I can definitely see what you mean with the meta layers. Once you see it, right, it's suddenly you see it everywhere once you realize what's mm-hmm. happening. Do you think this is then this trend is a passing fad? Is this here to stay? Where's it going?
I would say that it's probably it's going to stay. It's not something that is going to be going away in that matter, because more of these are games that are coming up. Puzzles and Survival was a hit. Project Makeover has been a hit. Top World was very interesting. There are other games like Archero, Idol Mafia. Games are trying to really stand out because there are a ton of mastery games. There are a ton of shooter games, 4X strategy games. And it's really the innovation also that makes a game stand out. So we believe that this trend is gonna continue. And we actually suggest the game developers to do a lot of cross-genre analysis. Not only have a look at your direct competitors, but have a look at what's happening in the market. What is it that you can take from the casino genre or puzzle genre if you're making a mid-core game still, because it works. So it's really finding good synergies for your core gameplay and the meta that you're thinking of adding to your game. But innovation is of course it's risky, but this is going to continue.
Yeah, I can see what you mean. I remember, there was the time when Candy Crush Saga was getting big, and every game added a a saga map, right? Whether or not it made sense, you saw these long twisty lines, mm-hmm. went through a bunch of different worlds, and it was a very easy, suddenly it became a very easy thing to conceive of and add to puzzle maps. So I guess I could see that it's now becoming this type of hybridization is becoming a part of the game developer's toolbox, which I think is super helpful, particularly since what is interesting about mobile games versus maybe other types of genres is that people are still figuring out how to present the interplay of the main mechanic versus the meta. If you're playing PC games or you know, even console games, it's a lot easier to like switch back. You have a lot more screen real estate, right? So it's very easy to switch back and forth between, oh, this is the meta, this is the mechanic. Here is, you know, my character, he's hungry. And then I have to hack and slash with these buttons to get some food. And then he's no longer hungry. Or here I'm about to start a race and I can see the full loadout of all of the elements of my car. And then when I'm playing the game, I can see how they're all interacting. Like, this is much easier to do when you have like a huge screen to do it versus like a mobile game where it feels like we're still innovating, as you said, when it comes to how to present that interplay. Do you think that any two mechanics can be mashed together, or does this not always work?
I think it depends. Like, it would be very dangerous to say just match anything, you know, like we can't really say that. It's because the game mechanics, it depends on how they work together, how it is built, like the implementation itself. Like, there are so things that sometimes doesn't work because it's not presented in the right way, you know, and you need to have like synergies between the mechanics too. Like, you can just like pull two random mechanics and you need to really think through it.
Yeah, I can see this ending up as a bit disastrous, but I won't put you on the spot to name and shame any particular games. That might not be so nice. Well, that's awesome. So I think that's about all the time we have. But any additional words on the topic?
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned, I think it's very important to do cross-genre analysis nowadays as the games are getting more and more hybrid. There is the IDFA changes happened in the IAA to IAP shift. We do have a lot of content at Game Refinery that we're preparing about it, so they can people can definitely go ahead and check out our webinars or the content we are producing, or just directly they can reach out to us to see like what are the custom ways of doing like market feature trends research and competition analysis on features and implementations. So we are definitely happy to help developers with that too.
So as a fun surprise for our listeners, we are testing out one final new thing today, which is going to be our lightning round. So we're going to quickly ask just a few questions and get your take. Are you ready for the lightning round?
All right, let's go.
Five questions. All right, here we go. Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
What's your favorite game?
Oh, Angry Birds.
Would you rather have new clothes or a new phone?
New. Oh my God, that's a hard one. Okay, new clothes.
What's your favorite animal?
Cats.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
Oh, there we go. I would love to breathe under the water.
Ooh, fish. Well, watch out, cats. Well, that was awesome. Well, folks, our lovely listeners, thanks for joining us today. I want to give a huge thank you to Aisu from Game Refinery for popping on and joining us today for the podcast and sharing some of these amazing insights. A lot of these are super actionable. So I'm really glad that you could join us today during this pivotal moment in mobile gaming history. And thank you so much for lending us a bit of your time today.
Thank you so much for having me too. It was great to chat about like what's happening in the market. Always happy to be here. And thank you for your time and for the listeners.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to share with a friend.
And make sure to follow us on social media and subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app.
We'd love for you to get in touch and find out more about the types of topics that you'd like to hear about and what would be most interesting for you.
And you can catch us again in 2 weeks' time for the next episode.
Bye.